You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What a game. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. I'll say it again, what a game. That game was a roller coaster from start to finish. It was really a roller coaster from before the game even started because we weren't sure if Kawhi Leonard was going to play. We found out he was going to play. We found out they were going to stagger his return with Paul George's, although he may still play tonight in New Orleans on the double end of a back-to-back. Who knows? But this game was insane. So no Paul George for the Clippers, no Eric Gordon and no Daniel House for the Rockets with Ben McLemore starting in place of House. And that first quarter was a wild ride because you had James Harden, who went off for 14 points in the first quarter and then was held scoreless for much of the second quarter. It was kind of like, have you ever heated something up in the microwave and, you know, it heats properly all around the edges and then in the middle it's nice and cold? That's what this Rockets game kind of felt like, at least offensively. Thank goodness for their defense and them turning it up a notch and also for the Clippers missing some shots. But offensively, that's what this felt like for this Rockets squad, is it felt like when you heat something up and it's warm all around the edges, cooked just perfectly, and in the middle, I should say, it is frozen solid, because that's how this game went. They came out strong, opened the first quarter 31-15. Second quarter, they lost 22-18. Third quarter, 31-25. And they finally won the fourth quarter, 28-25. But it was that last spurt at the end of the fourth quarter to seal the game where it really felt like they struggled offensively for the middle part of this game. And a lot of that can be attributed to dead legs by James Harden, who wound up playing 44 minutes because of the Westbrook foul trouble that we'll get into in just a second. But this game felt like a really gutsy win. The guys were undermanned. Russell Westbrook playing only 8 minutes in the first half due to foul trouble. James Harden having to play basically the entire game. He got one short rest at the end of the third quarter and checked back in very early into the fourth quarter, earlier than he normally does, did not take his usual long rest, and it was needed. Every single point by James Harden, all 47 of them things, were needed last night. The foul trouble situation with Westbrook was peculiar, to say the least. So he picks up three quick ones and has to go sit down. D'Antoni trusted him to leave him in with the two fouls. He picked up the third one on Patrick Beverley, blew by him, and he just got a ticky-tack reach-in foul, which was not a smart foul. So he pulls him. Harden plays his usual full, you know, almost entire first quarter, and then Russell Westbrook checks back in because D'Antoni usually follows the mantra of he's going to trust his players. He's going to trust them to play smart and not pick up that next foul, the next one that would really bench them for a long time or foul them out. And Westbrook checks back in and gets whistled for his fourth foul on what was a ridiculous offensive foul call. The number of times that whistle gets blown on that specific call, he was trying to break free of his defender to get a pass off of an inbounds. And when does that call ever get made against a star player? And not just that, but a star player who's already in foul trouble. Not sure what the message was being sent by the referees, but, you know, I'm not big on referee conspiracy theories. I know the Rockets have had their issues with Tony Brothers and Scott Foster in the past. I'm not denying those. But whatever it was, Westbrook got his fourth foul in the first quarter and had to sit down for the entire rest of the first half. So James Harden back in. They wrap up the first. James Harden plays the entirety of the second quarter, doesn't get his first rest until halftime, and then he also gets a rest, a very brief rest, at the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. So James winds up playing 44 minutes. He was productive in those 44 minutes, I'll tell you that. James Harden had 47 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, one of which being the game-clinching steal on Kawhi Leonard when he put the clamps on him at the very end of the game. Did have 6 turnovers, but again, we know that James is going to turn the ball over a little bit. It's okay. As a team, they actually only had 10 turnovers, and part of that can be attributed to the fact that Russell Westbrook spent so much time on the bench, he had no time to turn the ball over, which, you know, you can look at that as a good thing or a bad thing. He only had 2 turnovers for the game. The rest of his stat line, he had 17 points, a couple boards, a couple assists. That's basically it. Very quiet night for Russell Westbrook. He shot the ball pretty poorly, but he did come up with some very clutch buckets, a pair of back-to-back threes to dig the Rockets out of a very dark spot in the fourth quarter, which was the start to their 22-9 run to end the game. For all of Westbrook's inability to hit shots, I will say that he is a big-time shot hitter. It's felt like already this season he's had a number of those where the Rockets really need a bucket, and it's just, it's not coming from James for whatever reason. The other role players just can't seem to buy a shot, buy a basket, and then Westbrook steps into a completely uncontested three-point shot and drains it after missing his first 5. I want to say Westbrook was 0-5 from downtown, and then he hits one, and then he hits the next one. So he finishes the night 2-7 from downtown, 6-20 overall. Really poor shooting outing for Russell Westbrook, but he hit them when it counted, and that's what matters. So kudos to him, because those back-to-back threes, it was, I want to say it was 84-80 after the Kawhi Leonard and one three-point shot, the foul by Thabo Sefolosha, and then the Rockets at that point, when it was 84-80, they were down 4, they went on a 22-9 run to close out the game. Even a better way to look at it, because that's the final score, 22-9 puts them 102-93. That's basically the end of the game. But a better way to look at it was the 16-4 run that they went on, because that was the points scored after that point where it was 16-4, that run. Those final points were just kind of, you know, Hail Mary threes and free throws and kind of the stuff that always happens at the end of a close game. But the real run was 16-4. So the Rockets were up 96-88. And that was the kind of the moment where it looked like they were running away with the game. James Harden hit a 3. I mean, he was an absolute monster last night. At what point do you just... There's this point where we're just numb to James Harden's greatness. You look at the stat sheet, and he throws up another 47-point game. And honestly, if he's not putting up 40 points a night at this point, it's almost like it's a disappointment. You look at his box score, and if he's got 35, you're like, okay. Regular performance. Once he gets into the 40s, you're like, okay, you know, it's a little bit of an uptick than normal. He gets to the 50s, and you're like, all right, this is a really good game from James. And then when he hits 60s, you're like, oh yeah, there it is. You know, that's when we can start regarding it as special, which is ridiculous. It's because we've become numb to his ability to score the ball. This man was getting double teamed all night, and the Clippers, kudos to them for their defensive scheme, because it was definitely, I don't want to say it was working, because obviously he scored 47 points, but it's definitely making James Harden work for those buckets. He really didn't get anything easy last night, except for the 2 or 3 times that he just kind of walked the ball up the court, and I guess everybody forgot James Harden existed, and he just decided to pull up from like 28, 30 feet. Those were probably the easiest baskets he had all night, because the Clippers were double-teaming him, they were collapsing on him in the paint. There were points where James was just damn sure determined he was going to drive the ball to the basket and would wind up having to circumvent 2, 3, 4 Clippers defenders and then just scoop it up past their big, whether it was Zubats or whether it was Harrell in the paint, and he would still make the shot. That's just James Harden's greatness at work. And James Harden, with all 47 of his points, basically half of the Rockets' offense, on a night where they were undermanned, did not have Daniel House, did not have Eric Gordon, lost Clint Capella near the end of the game due to what looked like a pretty dirty play by Jamichael Green. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It looked like Jamichael Green lowered his shoulder into Clint Capella. Basically, Capella went up to contest a shot. Jamichael Green twisted and contorted his body and then just, bam, shouldered the absolute hell out of Clint Capella. And Capella was down, shaken up, visibly shaken up on the floor. Rockets had to call a timeout. He walked out of his own, you know, on his own two legs, didn't need a stretcher or anything, so thank goodness for that. But for a roster that's already decimated by a handful of injuries, obviously House is day-to-day. Eric Gordon's gone for 6 weeks. Clint Capella, he was taken to the back. They went through concussion protocol with him. Remains to be seen roughly how long he will be out, but I feel like it's safe to assume that he's probably not going to be available for at least the Friday game. I'd want to say that they want to play it safe with him, because if House, landing the way that he did on his back, prevented him from playing in this game, Capella, the way that he was got his noggin rang by Jamichael Green, I'd have to imagine that he's probably not going to play Friday night, or maybe miss at least one of the games on this upcoming back-to-back, the Pacers Friday and then up at the Timberwolves on Saturday. So that remains to be seen how he's doing, but he had another monster night. Even though it was cut short, he had a monster night, 12 points, another 20-rebound game. He's the first Rocket to record three consecutive 20-rebound games since Moses Malone back in, I want to say, the 80s, which is insane to think about. Capella just turned on a switch, and whether it's because that shoulder's feeling better or whether he's just got his conditioning back to where it needs to be and he's able to be as springy and as bouncy as he needs to be to absorb all these rebounds, whatever it is, he's got to keep it going, because watching this version of Capella versus the version of Capella we got coming into the season, it's been night and day. It's been absolutely unreal watching him soak up every single defensive board, the energy that he plays with. And when you're the defensive anchor, the Rockets can play great defense for 22 seconds, but if you don't grab that defensive rebound, it doesn't matter, because then the offense gets another chance to reset and try to attack your not stellar defense again. And if that's the case, if you give up offensive rebounds, you're going to struggle to be a good defensive team. That's the key to being a good defensive team, is securing defensive rebounds and then not giving the offense a chance to reset and try again. Because obviously, if you get 2, 3, 4 attempts in a row, you're going to make a bucket eventually. The percentages are right there. Even if you're shooting 25%, if you get 4 cracks at it, you're going to hit one of them eventually. So kudos to Capella for soaking in all those rebounds, and kudos to the team as a whole for really pulling it together and coming out with a gutsy win against this Clippers team. Welcome back into Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, I don't want to nitpick too much, because this was a really good game. The Rockets have really only faced 2, maybe 3 top-tier teams, and it remains to be seen whether or not the Heat are actually a top-tier team this year. But they faced the Bucks, they faced the Heat, and they faced the Clippers so far. Every other team past that have been kind of more these middling teams, teams that they, you know, arguably should have beaten. The Nets, you can make an argument for that they're a good team, but just struggling with their defensive woes, sure. But so far, really, it's just been 2 certified contenders, teams that came into the season and we knew that they were going to be good, and that was the Bucks and now the Clippers. And they're 1-1. But they looked really good in that first half against the Bucks. So it's kind of hard to take away that game and say, oh, well, you know, they played like crap against the Bucks. No, they didn't. They had a bad second half against the Bucks, and they almost came back and won the game. And that was the first game of the season, with a lot of the guys not in shape, a lot of the guys knocking the rust off, Russell Westbrook still trying to get familiar with the team, with the scheme, all these things. So we'll get a better idea when they face the Bucks later again this season of what they actually look like against a team as dominant as they are. But against the Clippers, these guys look good. And we've spoken a little bit about Harden and Westbrook and Capella, but P.J. Tucker had a relatively quiet game. He was 2-for-3 from downtown. I've said it before, I'll say it again. We got to get P.J. some more attempts from downtown. I don't know if it means that he's got to maybe rotate out of that corner a little bit, because it seems like McLemore and Austin Rivers, guys like that, are getting way too many three-point shots and not sinking nearly enough of them. P.J. was 2-for-3. McLemore was 2-of-8. Rivers was 1-of-8. Cephalosha missed his only attempt. Clemens was 0-of-2. Harden's shot 7-of-13. Westbrook, again, 2-of-7. But it feels like some of these three-point shots aren't being distributed to the good shooters. Daniel House wasn't in this game, but House would be the other one where I'd say most of the three-point shots need to land on House and P.J. Tucker, because they're your more consistent shooters. It's okay if Harden's jacking up a bunch of threes, because you know he's going to hit a decent majority of them if he's having a regular night. But Westbrook at 7 three-point attempts, probably too many. McLemore and Austin Rivers at 8 three-point attempts. In this game, it makes sense because you didn't have Eric Gordon and you didn't have Daniel House, sure. So you need guys to take those shots. But in this game specifically, I would have enjoyed P.J. Tucker to shoot the ball a little bit more. He's one of your consistent three-point shooters, and him only having three attempts is too few. There are way more opportunities where he's wide open in the corner, and he's either being a little gun-shy, not being as trigger-happy as he needs to be, or they're just not looking for him. So I'd like to see PJ get some more shot attempts. Ben McLemore started the game in place of Daniel House, didn't have a great overall game, definitely missed, I think it was one possession, he missed like 3 three-pointers in a row or 2 three-pointers in a row. Or maybe it was the same play run a couple times where, you know, James gets the screen from McLemore. McLemore slides out, and then James does a little behind-the-back pass over to McLemore. And it was that play specifically where he missed the same shot like 2 or 3 times. Maybe it wasn't the same possession, but maybe it was just consecutive possessions. But it feels like the Rockets missed their fair share of absolutely wide-open three-point shots. And this game could have been blown wide open rather than having that drought kind of in the middle where they struggled offensively. And that's just on them. That's just on the shooting percentages. And hopefully that gets better when you get Eric Gordon back. And hopefully he's not being hampered by that knee injury anymore. He comes back healthy. You get Daniel House back, who's shooting over 40% from behind the arc. You get your good shooters taking those shots. And then suddenly your offense goes from struggling for much of the game, the middle part of the game, to suddenly you're humming throughout the entirety of the game. And if you can hum on offense, if you can be consistent on that side of the ball and still put up the effort that they did on the defensive side of the ball, this team is going to be good. The defensive outing was unreal from everybody, top to bottom. James Harden played some lockdown defense at points on Kawhi Leonard. He was absolutely bodying Kawhi Leonard the same way that P.J. Tucker plays defense, the same way that Tucker uses his chest and gets into an offensive player, not to the point of fouling. Sometimes he gets whistled for a foul on it, sure, but it's that physical, gritty defense where, sure, you're not going to stop Kawhi Leonard. Let's face it, the top-tier guys in this league, LeBron, Kawhi, James, Westbrook to an extent, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, doesn't matter. The top guys in this league, the top 10, top 20, whatever, those guys are going to get theirs. It's a matter of how hard you make them work for it. They're still going to put up their numbers, but the more you make them work for it, the harder it is. And then suddenly, maybe when they get to the end of the game, rather than them having 40, 50 points by the end of the night, they're sitting on 30 instead. Or maybe they still get their 40, but they are gassed and they're too tired and too worn down and too physically exhausted when it comes down to that final shot. They just don't have their legs under them for that game-tying three or the game-winning two or whatever it may be. It's about just making them work for it. And P.J. Tucker does a great job of that, night in and night out. P.J. Tucker is the Rockets' best defender, and he will absolutely make whoever is the best offensive player on the opposing team, he will make sure that they know he is guarding them. And that's great. And James did that same thing to Kawhi Leonard on the switches that he guarded him last night, on other players. James was playing great defense last night. So kudos to him for that. Proud of James right there. The rest of the team also played great defense. I've got a list of miscellaneous thoughts that I sent out on Twitter before the game last night, and we'll revisit those in segment 3 because I was on the money with a couple of them, and then I was way off on a couple of them. So I want to go through each one of those in segment three and talk about each one, kind of see where my original thought was, how the game actually played out, and we'll kind of visit on that in a little bit. But the bench obviously struggled last night with no Eric Gordon. You don't have that scoring punch off the bench with no Daniel House either. You're losing another starter, so then you get one of your bench guys plugged into the starting lineup in Ben McLemore. So they went with Cephalosha, Chandler, Rivers, and Clemens as your main guys off the bench. Rivers played 34 minutes. Chandler was very productive in his 16 minutes. That plays into one of my points that I was dead wrong on going into the game yesterday. Cephalosha with 12 minutes, played some solid defense, missed all four of his shot attempts, only 1-3, everything else coming inside the paint, but had a handful of rebounds, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, had a steal. So he was productive defensively in his time on the court. Rivers, we'll talk about the Doc Rivers ejection, but for Austin Rivers' stat line, honestly not that great of a night. 7 points, 3 of 12 shooting, 1 of 8 from downtown. He had a few boards. No assists, no steals, 1 block, but not a great night in the office for Austin Rivers, but all of that is forgiven because of the end of the game technical on Doc Rivers. I'm going to get to Clemens' stat line, and then we'll talk about Doc Rivers here in just a second. Clemens had 11 minutes played, no points, missed both of his 3-point attempts, and that was about it. So he was more or less just a body to be in the game for a little bit. And when you're undermanned, that's what you got to do. So we didn't get to see any Gary Clark. We didn't see any Anderson or Isaiah Hartenstein, but they came out with the win anyways. Let's talk Doc Rivers for a moment and just how magical that moment was on the court. So Doc Rivers tries to challenge I mentioned it earlier, talking about Clint Capela tries to contest the shot from Jamichael Green. Jamichael Green kind of lowers his shoulder directly into Clint Capella's head and just rattles his noggin. Capela goes down, visibly shaken up. And so they called it out of bounds on the Clippers. Turns out, and the replay showed us this, James Harden actually successfully poked the ball from behind after Jamichael Green beat him off the dribble. James Harden pokes the ball out from behind of Jamichael Green. So it's technically out off Harden, but the refs called it out off the Clippers. But because of the whole issue with Clint Capela being shaken up, the Rockets had to call a timeout. By the time Doc Rivers wanted to challenge this call, it was past the, I think it's 30 seconds is the allotted time that you have. I mean, you're supposed to signal immediately when you want to challenge something. But basically, Doc Rivers tried to challenge this call, but he was well out of the allotted time range to actually successfully challenge this call, so it stayed Rockets basketball. Now, that plays a part later on, because I think, and I don't remember seeing any clarity on this at the end of the game. There was a statement from the refs, but I did not read, or I read part of it, and I can't remember at this very moment what their reasoning was for this. But basically, it looked like the refs stole a timeout from the Clippers, so I'm not going to complain, but definitely a bad job on the referees, because Doc Rivers tried to challenge this. So they called the timeout, they tried to challenge it, and then it still took one of his timeouts, I guess, or they waved it off or something, but it led to Doc Rivers attempting to call another timeout down the line because he thought he still had one, and then one of the Clippers equipment trainers was also certain that they had a timeout to spare. Doc Rivers tries to call a timeout, gets called for a technical because of this. James Harden shoots the technical free throw, and Doc Rivers then is arguing with the referees and storms midcourt, yelling at Tony Brothers that he should be able to advance the ball because the Clippers are getting ready to toss the ball in from the baseline, and he's arguing that he should be able to advance the ball because he called a timeout for that unsuccessful challenge. So he is furious. He comes storming out midcourt. He is yelling. He's pointing at Tony Brothers, this, that, and the other thing. And then Austin Rivers just kind of pans in from the side and just starts signaling, tee him up. Tee him up. Tee up my dad. And if you haven't been on Twitter, there's photos everywhere. It's all around. You can see the video of it. And it's absolutely incredible that just Austin Rivers just kind of walks in and says, nope, tee him up, tee up my dad, get him out of here, eject him, get him out. And so that's exactly what happens. Doc Rivers gets ejected, gets thrown out of the game. And as he's leaving the arena, the camera pans back to Austin Rivers, and you see Austin just kind of throw up the, hey, call me, you know, call me sign. You know, I'll talk to you later. Have a good night, Dad. And that moment, look, Tunnelgate was great. Chris Paul, first time back in LA facing the Clippers, Tunnelgate was incredible. This moment might have beaten Tunnelgate for me. I don't know about you guys, but man, was that hilarious to watch Austin Rivers just beg for a technical on his dad, and then to really to lead to him to get ejected from the game. I shared a photo from the NBA subreddit on my Twitter, where NBA Twitter has taken to calling Austin Rivers, his new name is Houston Bayous. It's pretty great. So that's on my Twitter, again, at JT Gatlin, if you want to go take a look at that. But Austin is Houston for life now. After that moment, that was great. And then he comes on Twitter after the game and says, man, Thanksgiving's going to be weird. So kudos to Rivers. That was incredible. That's definitely going to make for an awkward Thanksgiving meal. Probably going to be written out of Doc Rivers' will. And that household may be torn asunder by his own son calling for a technical on him. Man, that was great. Now, before we get out of this segment, I have a quick message from our friends over at MyBookie. During Thanksgiving week, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250, and if you win, congrats. You've got extra holiday spending money. If you lose, congrats to you as well. MyBookie will actually give you all of your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer, MyBookie welcomes everybody to come play, so quit waiting around and sign up today. Just log on to mybookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDONNBA. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will actually match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll, and that's on top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for Thanksgiving only. So if you're a true football fan and you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by, you simply can't lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in on the action with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, and we are back here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. And like I said already, I just want to revisit some of my initial thoughts heading into this game and kind of see how right or how wrong I was headed in. So my first thought was defending Montrezl Harrell. Rockets have historically struggled against explosive, athletic, high-motor bigs like him. And he always plays with a chip on his shoulder against Houston. Now, how did they do against Montrezl Harrell? They did pretty well. Montrez played 38 minutes. He went 2 of 12. He did soak up 9 rebounds, but he only had 4 points. And it feels like this is the lowest scoring outing he's had against the Houston Rockets since the trade in a long, long time. Like, it's just, it feels like every game that the Rockets play against the Clippers, Montrez plays with a chip on his shoulder and goes off for seemingly a 20-point night every outing. Gets tons of putbacks, is ridiculous around the rim, his explosiveness, his athleticism, he tends to bully the Rockets a little bit. And he wasn't able to do that last night. And I think that's in large part to Clint Capela and Tyson Chandler and the minutes that they played. They soaked in a lot of rebounds. They played great defense. They really anchored the paint for the team last night. And that is a counterpoint to one of my thoughts later on. And we'll see why in just a moment. My second thought was Westbrook and Beverly, and that they were definitely going to be checking each other, and that they were going to, you know, tempers were going to flare, that those two guys are a couple hot-headed fools. And it turns out, it was actually Beverly checking Harden for a lot of the night. So it wasn't so much, and part of that was the Westbrook foul trouble early on. Him sitting down freed up Patrick Beverly to get to guard James Harden. And so they threw a bunch of different defenders at Harden. They had Harkless on him. They had Magruder on him. They had Beverly on him. They had Kawhi on him at points. So Harden saw a handful of different defenders last night, and he burned every single one of them. So Beverly actually really, more or less, was trying to get on Harden's nerves than Westbrook's nerves last night. And I thought that was interesting because I figured Pat Beverly, from the mental aspect of the game, would have been wanting to kind of ride Westbrook a little bit, kind of get under his skin, because Westbrook's the guy you can make Westbrook angry, whereas Harden doesn't necessarily retaliate when angry. He just plays better. So I think overall this was a bad decision by Beverly to try to get under Harden's skin, and I think it all started with that first play where Harden was walking up on offense early in the first, and Beverly was trying to guard him, and Beverly falls down, therefore tripping James Harden, and then James purposely kind of falls again a second time right on top of Beverly, and Beverly gets called for the impeding the offensive player foul call, which is a ridiculous call, but I mean, if Beverly's going to try and fall down and flop, then kudos to James for flipping the book and I guess just pulling the same card on Beverly. We've seen it before. James is just trying to occupy his space. Beverly's over there impeding progress, so foul on Beverly. Good on James. James didn't buy into it. He didn't let Beverly get under his skin, and he just continued to torch the Clippers. So I wasn't super right on the money with that one, but Beverly was trying to get under somebody's skin. It just wasn't Westbrook. Third one was free throw attempts. Coming to this game, the Rockets ranked number one in the NBA in free throw attempts per game at 30.1. The Clippers were number two at 28.3. We can consider that the James Harden, Lou Williams effect, so to speak. Kawhi Leonard still gets his fair share of free throws. Montrezl Harrell goes to the line quite a bit. But overall, the Rockets did a great job of limiting the Clippers' free throw attempts. They only shot 14 free throws last night, and they missed half of them. So they were 7 of 14 from the line, whereas the Rockets shot a lot closer to their usual average. They shot 27 free throws, and they were 22 of 27 from the line for 81%. So Clippers shooting 50% and shooting much less, about half as normal, as many as they normally do, and the Rockets shooting just a few less than they normally do, and on pretty good percentage, honestly. So the Rockets actually held up their end right there. There were plenty of times that Lou Williams was looking to draw fouls, but the Rockets stayed disciplined. Once Lou Williams beats you off the dribble, there is no reason to then body him or reach in and foul him, because you know he's going to finish the shot. That's what he does. Same thing for Kawhi, same thing for Harrell, and the Rockets did that plenty of times last night where they said, okay, you know what, I got beat, I'm not going to reach in, I'm not going to give a ticky-tack foul. There were no three-point fouls last night there was the one three-point foul on Kawhi Leonard by Thabo Sefolosha, but Lou Williams, unless I'm remembering incorrectly, I don't think Lou Williams was fouled on a three-point attempt last night, which is huge. He does the same thing James Harden does when he goes up for a three. He really baits you into it with his kind of sidestep. He doesn't quite have a step back like James does, but Lou Williams has that kind of fading to the left shot that is nigh unguardable, almost like James Harden's step back, and he gets fouled quite a bit on that shot. So the Rockets managed to not do that last night. They managed to keep the Clippers off the free throw line, which was a key part of staying in that game and ultimately coming out with the win. Fourth one was, I expected MDA to match Rivers' minutes with Lou Williams, and for the most part, he did that last night. And for the most part, Houston Bayous, that's what we got to call him, Houston Bayous. So for the most part, Bayous played great defense on Williams last night. He was covering him, and he didn't just play defense on Williams, because again, the Rockets have a switching scheme, so there were plenty of possessions where Rivers was guarding Beverly or even Kawhi a couple times, and Bayous' energy last night was infectious, and the rest of the team was playing great defense already, but when you have a guy who can check in off the bench to guard the opposing team's best bench player, Lou Williams, you know, year in, year out, sixth man of the year candidate, really could be a starter on something, 20 teams in the NBA, and for all intents and purposes, he is a starter. He's basically the Eric Gordon of the Clippers. You know, there are going to be games where Eric Gordon is in the closing lineup or where Eric Gordon gets starters minutes, just like Lou Williams. And so for the Rockets to have a guy like Austin Rivers, who is as good of a perimeter defender as he is, Austin is great at fighting over screens. He's great at on-ball defense. He makes the correct reads. He understands how to stay with an offensive player, and he's got the speed and the agility and the intellect to do that. Watching Austin Rivers play on-ball defense is great, because the only person who plays, I think, maybe better on-ball defense than Rivers on the current team is PJ Tucker. But those two guys are your two best on-ball defenders. Daniel House is making a case for also being in that argument, but he's also younger. He does make mistakes at times, but Austin Rivers is a great on-ball defender, and he put that on display last night. Lou Williams, yeah, he had 20 points, but he was 1 of 5 from downtown, 8 of 22 overall. He had to work for those 20 points, and I mentioned that earlier. Just great offensive players are going to get theirs. That's going to happen, but it's about how hard you make them work for those shots, and Rivers absolutely made Lou Williams work for every bucket that he got last night. My fifth point was that it would be interesting, to see how often Kawhi is Harden's primary defender. And we already covered that a little bit, that Harden saw a number of defenders last night, and there were points where Kawhi was guarding Harden, but overall, Harden beat everybody he played last night. He beat the Clippers team as a whole. Their entire game plan was to shut down Harden and make other players beat you, and he still put up 47 points. At this point, when James Harden wants to score the ball, he is going to score the basketball. And then you're going to have the haters who come out and say, oh, he only scores because of the free throw line. You take away his free throws, guess what? He still had 31 points. You want to know why he got free throws? Because people are fouling him. You want to know why people are fouling him? Because they can't guard him. This man is unguardable. Whether it's the step back, whether it's driving to the bucket, whether it's driving to the bucket and then facilitating for a teammate, whether it's a behind-the-back dish, it doesn't matter. He has it all. He is the most complete package offensive player and the best offensive player in the NBA. I'm not going to sit here and make an argument for James Harden being the best player in the NBA because there can be arguments made for other guys. But James Harden is... you can't even make an argument. Sorry, I was almost speechless for a moment. He is the best offensive player in the NBA. I think he's a top three player in the NBA. We're not going to dive into that right now. I don't want to open a can of worms, so I'm not going to keep going down that path. But James Harden is the best offensive player in the NBA, and we'll leave it at that. And he absolutely cooked the Clippers last night. Now, my last point was how much burn, if any, will the younger guys on the roster get? For MDA to make it through this six-week stretch with no Gordon and currently no Daniel House, he's going to have to trust Clemens and Clark a little bit. And then this is the part where I have to eat crow. I said Chandler is unplayable against Harrell, so we may get some Clark action. And I will absolutely eat crow on that. Chandler played phenomenal last night. My reasoning behind that thought was I figured that Montrezl Harrell would be a little bit too quick and a little bit too explosive for Chandler to deal with, because we've seen Chandler struggle a bit against some faster bigs earlier this season where it kind of looked like he was a turnstile and just not moving his feet, not able to do whatever. But I also kind of forgot about Montrez's lack of a jump shot. So the other bigs that I think that Chandler's struggled with did have some speed and some more athleticism, but they also had a bit of a mid-range game that he had to honor, which brought him a little bit further away from the basket, whereas Montrez, his game is all predicated on being as close to the basket as possible, whether it's these little baby hooks, whether it's just dunking, layups, offensive boards. That's what Montrez does. And so you were able to keep Chandler in the game and put him on Montrez and basically nullify everything that Montrez brings to the table. Again, he finished the game with 4 points. He did get 9 rebounds, but he only had 1 offensive board. That was critical. Montrezl Harrell with only 1 offensive rebound means you're doing a great job at boxing out on the defensive side. Chandler, Capella, the rest of the team, the guys did great at not giving up those second chance points to Montrez or giving up those offensive rebounds for him to kick back out for another chance at resetting the offense. As a team, the Clippers had 11 offensive rebounds. They beat the Rockets in that category. Rockets only had 9. But keeping a team to that few offensive rebounds, pretty solid. This is one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league. So the Rockets did a great job in that regard, and I was totally wrong about Chandler. He played a great game against Montrez and against the rest of the Clippers, and he also had the cherry on top of this incredible win, which was the James Harden dime from pretty much almost the logo, I want to say. Maybe he was closer to the three-point line, but as they were walking the ball up for the final possession, Tyson Chandler's just kind of cruising along the left baseline, and then he notices the defense isn't set, and then he just takes off towards the rim, and James Harden, with that great court vision, that great awareness, just puts the ball right exactly where Chandler needs it, right on the lip of the rim. Chandler grabs it and stuffs it with a reverse slam. 37-year-old Tyson Chandler reverse slammed the basketball to put an exclamation point on this win for the Houston Rockets. Man, it was a good game. Game of the Year candidate right there. Even though the Rockets were undermanned, and even though the Clippers didn't have a Paul George, I think that that washes out. I think that no Eric Gordon, no Daniel House, and then losing Capella for the final minutes of the game washes out with the Clippers not having Paul George. I think that's a fair estimate for what Daniel House and Eric Gordon give you versus what Paul George gives you. I think that's fair. Don't you guys? I think that's fair, and we'll leave it at that. So for this Thursday morning episode, this is where we will break things. As always, thank you for listening. Now, you guys know the drill. If you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there, at JT Gatlin. The show is on there, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. The website, LockedOnRockets.com. And of course, our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways that you can consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show. You can place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do for you to improve this experience. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts at, if you could take a moment to rate and subscribe to the show. And when you rate it, if you give us a 5-star review, that'd be great, because that's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox. And then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers, and then we can keep this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering your Houston Rockets. Again, for this Thursday morning episode, this is where we break things. As always, thank you for listening, and I hope to have you back again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.